supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Temple, Ball State at 2, Iowa's at Penn State at 3:30, and Fordham visits Penn at 6. You're listening to WHYY.
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden, where we're kind of celebrating our 14th anniversary, but the only way we're celebrating it is by telling you we are now entering our 14th year on the air. Thank you for keeping us here. Later on in the show, we'll talk about morning glory. Some people think they're invasive. Some people think they're just a pretty plant. What are they? Are they weeds or are they wonders? We'll discuss that and the nature of what constitutes a weed when we get to the question of the week. But there's no better way to celebrate than with a heap and helping of your fabulous phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Nancy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike. It's great to be here. We love your show.
Where are you, Nance?
We're in Steelmantown, New Jersey.
Okay, very good. And what can we do for you?
Well, we got back from a recent vacation, and my husband was walking the dog the next morning and looked up at one of our beautiful white cedar trees and noticed these thick spider webs connecting the lower branches, forming casings, almost like bagworms are formed. We did have an issue with bagworms on our arborvitae a couple of years ago. They're very sticky and cocoon-shaped. So far, they're only on the bottom of the branches, but the branch tips appear to be dying where this cocoon-shaped web has formed.
Bagworm nests kind of resemble pine cones, right?
Yes.
Because you had the bagworm nest.
We did experience that pleasure.
And that's one reason that these creatures, which are caterpillars inside the bags, often get to defoliate, and arborvitae is perhaps their favorite plant. Because the bags are so good, a lot of people mistake them for pine cones or, you know, just seed cones.
Yes, we didn't notice them, right? There was probably 100 on this one tree before we noticed them.
And you're lucky you did notice them. It's one of the most effective camouflage techniques in the insect world. Now, what you're describing sounds to me, I'm going to make a leap of faith here based on the time of year, and I'm going to call it fall webworms. What do you think? These are social caterpillars who make nests in trees. The white nest gets kind of dirty and brown. And when the caterpillars are most active, you can actually see them moving around inside the nest. In the spring, it would be there's another tent caterpillars in the spring. And fall webworms, duh, in the fall.
The way you described it sounds exactly like what it looks like.
Yeah, okay. So I think you have fall webworms. Now, do you feed these trees?
No, we don't.
Okay. Are they mulched?
Very little.
Ah, ding, ding, ding. What are you using? Trashy wood mulch, right?
Yes, but we actually didn't mulch the area where these are for probably 2 years.
Oh, okay, good. Good. If you do want to mulch your plants with anything, you know, trees don't need any mulch. The only thing the mulch does is it can make a barrier against lawnmower damage and keep weeds down near the trunk. Compost makes a great mulch. But no, if you haven't put wood mulch around them for a couple of years, I'm going to say that they were probably stressed by the weather extremes, having to go through that hideously hot and dry early part of summer, and then just the relentless rains that have followed. So it's very natural for plants to be stressed. And the reason I bring that up is if people are using tree spikes or giving trees chemical fertilizers, it attracts these pests like mad. But, you know, this season we didn't need any artificial help to stress any of our plants. They're all stressed to the hilt by nature. So you got a couple of options. One of the best ways to fight these pests, especially if there's some nests that are hard to reach, is to go out and buy some BT, which is the organic caterpillar killer. This remedy must go back 50 years. Conventional farmers use it all the time. I think they think it's a chemical. And the brand names it's sold under, the two big ones are Dipel and Thoracide, almost make it sound like a chemical. But it's a naturally occurring soil organism. All you have to do is ask for the BT that kills caterpillars, and you spray it up into all the parts of the tree. And then any time a caterpillar eats a sprayed part of the tree, their stomachs stop working, and within a day or two, the caterpillar will be dead. So it's very effective. It only kills caterpillars that are feeding on the plant that you sprayed. But if yours are all low, you know, the old-fashioned way is just to bust up the nest with a broom or something.
Okay. You know, just, so far, they're just in the lower branches.
Well, you know, you can just do the old-fashioned thing. Now, I will admit, and anybody out there who, like, doesn't think even insects should be harmed should just cover their ears for the next 40 seconds. What I'll do is I'll take my flame weeder and I'll just aim it up into the nest and I'll roast and toast the little caterpillars that are trying to kill my tree. They show up in my crabapple tree every once in a while. But that's what it is. Those are nests that are filled with caterpillars. And if you do just knock the nest out of the tree, be aware that you then have to do the dance of death, because there'll be, like, lots of caterpillars running around trying to get away. So
right, get into another tree, yeah.
But that's what you have. You have one of these communal caterpillars that builds nests in trees. There's two or three different species. But, you know, whenever there's a caterpillar involved, BT is the spray solution.
Okay.
All right, Nance?
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mike. Pleasure talking to you.
Same here. Good luck with those nests.
Okay, bye.
1-888-346-9499. Jeffrey, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi there.
Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Just fine.
Good. And where is Jeffrey?
New Bern, North Carolina.
Ah, very good. We're getting a lot of calls from North Carolina. I imagine it's a nice climate for gardening now, isn't it?
Well, it depends where you are. You can be from the coast, which is like Florida, all the way out to Boone, which is near Tennessee, and that's like being in Burlington, Vermont. So you can really have all the environments there.
I have friends in Boone. And as you know, yes, it's up in the mountains. It's kind of a cool climate. But Boone is right in the middle of that giant natural rhododendron forest.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Oh, and I was there in the spring. I'd never seen anything like that before. You could probably see it from airplanes.
Oh, yeah.
All right. What can we do for Jeffrey in New Bern, North Carolina?
Well, more a curiosity question. As everyone knows, we just had a hurricane blow through. Irene really ripped up the town and the city pretty badly. But to everyone's shock and surprise, a lot of the Bradford pears are all blooming now.
Oh.
So you have these big, beautiful white blooms right next to the seeds formed on the blooms from the spring.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I was questioning whether or not I had a tree in my yard that wasn't damaged, and then there's two or three other trees at place of work where they lost a third of the tree. And it's the damaged trees that were blooming. And I was curious if it was the severe shock or damage to the tree that triggered the bloom or forced the bloom, or if it was indeed the wind and the weather.
I think your instincts are correct. We think of flowering as indicative of a happy plant. But in truth, flowering can also be a stress response. You know, flowering is how a plant produces offspring. And a lot of times there are certain types of flowering plants that if life is easy, they won't flower. They don't have to. You know, they got all the food and water they want. They don't want any competition. Sometimes the way to induce flowers is through stress, which is, you know, the real principle of pruning, to remove the old flowers quickly or to prune certain parts of the plant to induce it to try to procreate, make it think that it's threatened.
Well, I think that's why you keep geraniums blooming all year long. You cut the bloom off before it forms a seed, right?
Yeah. Sometimes we see flowers in the fall from faulty pruning by humans. But a lot of times there will be a cold snap in like August, and it'll be really cold for a while. And then we'll have the Indian summer of all summers. And this is almost typical of azaleas and rhododendrons, that sometimes they will go into a false bloom at that time, and they'll produce the flowers that were scheduled for next spring, but they're pumping them out now. This sounds like a more serious stress reaction. Now, I'm going to diss Bradford pears. They're trash.
Yeah.
Yeah. They grow quickly. At least at one point a few years back, they were the absolute cheapest tree you could grow and buy. Any tree that grows fast is not going to be long-lived, and it's not going to be sturdy. The best trees are slow to medium growers. So, and Bradford pears, they're widow makers in a storm, man. They can't wait to splinter. They're trying to beat the splinter rush by being the first to drop their branches. But anyway, I think you're correct. I think this is a stress reaction. It's trying to produce more seeds, trying to go on. Those trees will not bloom again in the spring, or the bloom will be somewhat scattered. Okay. Now, any trees that you have that didn't go through this false bloom, they should give you a good show in the spring.
Good. I get bragging rights and a flowering tree this spring.
Exactly. And the people whose trees were damaged, if they'll listen to any advice, tell them don't feed them, don't mulch them. The only pruning that should be done would be to remove jagged edges or branches that are hanging down. If they want to do more structural pruning, since it's not going to bloom in the spring anyway, that should be done in the dead of winter. But your trees, any good trees that bloom at the right time of year, the time to prune them is after they finish blooming in the spring.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for the report. I'm not surprised. The plants in many parts of the country have just been through hell on a stick this summer.
And you had the flooding up in Pennsylvania, and we had the wind down here. So
yeah, it's been murder.
I'll take our trade.
I'm glad yours is going to bloom for you next spring, Jeff.
You bet.
All right,
thanks,
take care, sir.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and sound the garlic planting alarm. Congratulations to those of you whose cloves are already safely nestled in the ground. But those of you who are, intending to grow garlic for harvest next year need to know that the clock is ticking fast and you are lagging behind. Plant your cloves soon or you'll miss the window of good garlic growing time. But don't go flying to a farmer's market to pick up some locally grown heads just yet, because we'll be right back with lots more of your fabulous phone calls and the opinion on morning glories. Pretty plants or weedy mess? I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
This is WHYY.
Medford Lees proudly supports WHYY, a Quaker-related, not-for-profit community celebrating 40 years of service. Medford Lees offers two campuses in Medford and Lumberton, New Jersey, featuring arboretum settings, residential home designs ranging from townhouses to garden-style apartments, varied contract options, a self-governing residence association, and comprehensive on-site wellness and health services. Further details at 800-331-4302 or medfordlees.org.
WHYY is trying something new. Visit WHYY.org/Ystream by October 12th, pledge $60, and experience streaming radio without the pledge breaks during our fall member campaign. For more information, WHYY.org/Ystream.
The WHYY forecast for today, simply terrific. Mostly sunny skies with a high of 78. Right now it's 66 degrees.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, privileged to have finished 13 years in this seat, starting our 14th year of doing this wonderful show. Stay tuned, and you will hear us talk about morning glories later in the show. Are they pretty plants that can grow up the side of buildings and make great use of limited space? Or are they invasive weeds that'll overwhelm your neighbor's property? We'll have a close to definitive answer. But first, a lot more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Jane, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, hi.
Hello, Jane. How are you?
I'm great.
You sound great. Where is Jane great?
Harbor Springs, Michigan.
Oh, okay. Very good. What can we do for Jane in Harbor Springs?
Well, I have two rose bushes. They're William Baffin climbing rose bushes. They're probably 8 or 9 feet tall now. They have been absolutely gorgeous. And this summer, I don't know, something is eating all the leaves, and they've hardly bloomed at all. And I'm thinking I need to prune them back, but I'm not really sure. I hate to ruin them.
No. Well, you don't prune anything now.
Okay.
Because your plants are going dormant, and they were stressed. So they have a limited amount of life energy to send down to the root system. If you prune them now, you use up some of that energy, and especially where you are, you expose them to great winter damage. You'll prune them a little bit in the spring. And you never saw anything eating the leaves on your roses?
No.
Okay. Describe the damage.
All that's really left are the veins and the outside of the leaves.
Oh, that's Japanese beetle damage.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, when it's like a lace curtain effect, you know, mm-hmm. when the leaves all get lacy, that's either Japanese beetle damage or there is a variation. There is another scarab beetle. These are all the same basic family of beetle that flies by night and does the exact same damage as Japanese beetles, but only shows up in the evening. So it's a very tricky pest. Do your roses get morning sun?
Yes.
What do you feed them?
The regular stuff I get at the nursery.
Oh, so chemical fertilizer.
Yeah.
Okay, that's part of the problem.
Ooh, okay.
That when you feed roses chemicals, it knocks out their natural defenses, and it causes a lot of lush, extra fast growth that the plants really can't support, and it's that lush, fresh growth that is most attractive to these kind of pests. You don't use Japanese beetle traps or anything like that, do you?
No. Mm-mm,
okay.
No.
Is there any mulch underneath the plants?
Yep, I use mulch.
Is it wood mulch?
Yep.
Okay, so you're weakening the plants there, too.
Oh,
I'm surprised your leaves aren't all diseased with wood mulch and chemical fertilizer. Do you spray them with something?
No, I don't spray them.
Okay, good. So don't use wood mulch anymore. What you want to do is between now and next spring, you want to find a good source of compost.
I have compost.
Okay. What do you make your compost from?
Well, we live in the woods, so there's lots of leaves in there, and I put kitchen scraps in there as well.
So mostly leaves with some kitchen scraps?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's good. And it composts down for you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you shred the leaves?
Nope, just toss them in there.
If you shred the leaves this fall instead of putting them in whole, you'll get a lot more compost a lot faster.
Okay.
And you could use the help in your climate, you know, because winter is so cold, composting stops.
Right.
So shred the leaves up, and with your kitchen waste, the best stuff you can add in there is coffee grounds.
Okay.
That really heats it up. Get rid of the wood mulch. It really stresses any plant, but it affects roses the worst. You're not going to use any chemical fertilizers again. What I want you to do, leave them alone now. In the dead of winter, if you want, that would be the best time. You can go out and prune them back a little bit. There's no reason to prune them hard. And then in the spring, I want you to re-clean the area underneath them. Get rid of any old mulch. Put down 1 inch or 2 inches of compost. No more chemical fertilizers. And then as we progress throughout the season, no outdoor lighting at night. If you have like a night light or a street light right near these plants, it's going to bring these night flying Asiatic beetles right to your plants. I mean, you're also welcome to go out in the middle of the night and see if you can find these pests. But when you first see the leaves start to be skeletonized,
mm-hmm.
then you want to get a good organic insecticide, either neem or one of the spinosads. Those are two very good organic insecticides. They won't hurt you or your environment, but you'll spray them all over the leaves, and then any Asiatic or even Japanese beetles or any of the scarab beetles that try to feed on your leaves will die. With that and the lack of chemical fertilizer and feeding them compost, I think you're going to do fine. All right?
I appreciate your help.
All right. My pleasure, Jane. You have a good season.
You too. Thanks.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Susie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike. How are you?
I am doing just fine, Suze. Where are you?
I'm in St. Paris, Ohio. It's about 35 miles north of Dayton.
Oh, okay. St. Paris.
Yes. Lovely name.
Isn't it? That's a great name. Do you know the derivation?
Not really.
Okay, well, that was a short conversation. Thanks for calling.
I think I have early blight on my tomato plants. I'm not sure. I looked up the pictures on the website, and it doesn't look like it's the late blight, which a lot of people around here seem to have. I have, like, the leaves will get real spotted on the bottom, and then it kind of works its way up the stem.
What about the fruits?
The fruits are, I get fruits, but they're kind of like cracked on the top.
Okay, no, no, no. The blights are monstrous. The late blight you refer to, the pathogen that causes late blight is the exact same pathogen that caused the Irish potato famine.
Okay.
And it spreads typically from infected potatoes to tomatoes because they are so botanically related. But the bad thing about the blights compared to the lesser tomato diseases is the spots appear on the fruits as well.
Right, okay.
And they make them inedible.
So that's on early blight also?
That it's on either of the blights, yeah.
Okay.
But
okay.
When you talk about cracking at the top of the tomato, uh-huh. That happened to everybody this year because most parts of the country experience such mood swings
okay.
of weather going from a very hot, dry early summer to now many parts of the country being saturated.
Yes.
And you're in Ohio, so I'm guessing you had pretty much the same weather this season.
Yeah, we did. We had a real rainy spring, a dry summer, and now it's raining again. So
okay, so are you growing in flat ground or raised beds?
Flat ground.
You got to move up to raised beds.
Okay.
Are you growing your tomatoes in the same spots every year?
No.
So
no, in fact, I actually moved my whole tomato bed to a different area in the yard.
Good.
Trying to get it to go away, and the first year they seemed to be okay, and then the next year they did the same thing.
What are you feeding them?
I actually got some of the tomato food that they sell there at the Garden Alive. I can't remember the name of it.
Okay, so you used a natural tomato food
yes,
as opposed
yes.
to a chemical fertilizer. That's
yes.
very good. Where do you get your tomatoes? Do you start them yourself? Do you buy them?
No, I buy them from a greenhouse.
And what do you buy?
I get Rutgers and Celebrities.
Oh,
Big Boys,
man.
Beefsteaks.
Well, Rutgers and Celebrity are both fairly disease-resistant.
Right, and that's why I buy them.
Do your tomatoes get morning sun?
Oh, they get sun all day long.
They get sun all day long, so they were really stressed early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you have any compost?
I do have compost.
And what do you do with it?
I try to put it around the tomatoes when I plant them. The compost that we use is just, we take everything out there and just dump it in. And we also have chickens that we use the chicken manure in with straw.
Okay, well, composted chicken manure,
mm-hmm.
that would be too nitrogen rich for your tomatoes.
Okay.
That's something you would put on your lawn or on sweet corn, a non-flowering plant. You're probably giving your tomatoes too much nitrogen.
Okay.
Your chore for this fall is to collect and shred massive amounts of fall leaves because
okay.
it's really just those fall leaves that become the useful compost.
Okay.
And if you mix your chicken bedding in with those fall leaves,
mm-hmm.
don't add anything else. That's more nitrogen than anybody needs, but the leaves will combine with that nitrogen and make exactly what you need, which is going to be hot compost that can fight disease.
Okay.
Either get a mulching lawnmower or get a kit to turn your lawnmower into a mulcher because you shouldn't be collecting grass clippings.
Okay.
Those clippings should be pulverized and returned to your lawn. That is the absolute best use for grass clippings.
Okay.
This year, also, you know, in the fall, spring, whenever it stops raining, I want you to humor me. Build one lousy raised bed,
okay,
4x8, and put two tomato plants in it. Really build up the soil well. Go to our website. Go to Garden Answers A to Z. Look under R for raised beds.
Okay.
Fill it up with a combination of compost and screen topsoil. You may need to buy some compost. Then when you put your plants in the ground next year, save up your eggshells, put the crushed shells of a dozen eggs in the hole with the tomato plant, bury your plants deeply, you know, to bury the stems
yes.
underground. Are you giving them real good support?
Well, I thought I was, but my cages actually blew over this year. So.
But they are in real cages made of, like, animal fencing?
Yes, they are.
So you just need to drive bigger stakes into the ground.
Right.
Okay.
I think I do because we're pretty out in the open here. We're pretty flat.
And then take the compost that you make from your shredded fall leaves and your chicken sweepings out and put that as a mulch an inch or two deep all over the surface of the bed that the tomatoes are growing in.
Okay.
If you start to see any discolored leaves, pull them off immediately.
Okay.
The power of raised beds is beyond belief. It keeps your big feet off the plants. The soil doesn't get compacted. It drains better. It holds moisture better. It gives the plants the extra edge they need in case disease comes a-calling. They can resist it naturally.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate your time and your helpfulness.
All right. Good luck, Suze.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Wit, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. I'm in Kinston, North Carolina.
All right. What can we do for Wit in Kinston, North Carolina?
Last week, you made a comment about biosolids, and I had been planning on using biosolid compost from a neighboring municipality to compost centipede lawns this fall. We have a big problem with brown patch here because of the humid late summer months with high nighttime temperatures. And it seems that compost would be a really good way to deal with the brown patch problem, to raise the nitrogen level in the soil and introduce hopefully some beneficial microbes.
Well, let me slow you down for a second here, Whit, because obviously we're about to talk about biosolids, which is the nice way of saying sewage sludge. Centipede grass is interesting to me. That's a warm season grass, and it is supposed to be the most low-maintenance grass out there.
That's
now,
right.
When were you planning to feed the centipede?
In the fall, after it cools down a little bit.
But wouldn't that be technically incorrect?
That's what I've been advised to do by extension, because feeding in the summer tends to stress the centipede here.
I might want to get a third opinion. Everything I've been taught is that warm season grasses like centipede should only be fed when they're actively growing, which in North Carolina, in your case, would be mid to late spring throughout the summer. I don't think you want to feed centipede in the fall because it goes dormant in the fall. Matter of fact, I would imagine in North Carolina, which is not that far south, that it may even go tan for some months in the wintertime?
It does go dormant in the wintertime, and the idea is to make the nitrogen available so the nitrogen cycle can begin during the winter, and then it can be available in the summer when the centipede wakes back up.
Okay, although I respect the training and knowledge of the extension agents, I have to say that I disagree completely, and my fear is that you could further injure these lawns, not by feeding them biosolids, that's going to be a separate little discussion, but by feeding them in the fall. They're trying to go dormant. I think if you feed them now, you'll do the same thing as people in the north who prune their plants in the fall because they feel like it. The plant is trying to go dormant. You slap it awake, and instead of helping the plant, you actually sap some of the energy that your centipede grass has to send down to its root system to survive the coming winter.
Sure.
So I would delay any feeding until we start to green up again in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my concerns about biosolids have nothing to do with what some of our listeners, they always want me to do shows on humanure, you know, our human
right.
manure. And there's nothing really wrong with, quote, our manure. My concern about biosolids is the same concern. You know, they're not allowed for use in organic agriculture. And the two big reasons are criminals put stuff down the sewers. You know, these auto centers, these auto stores, these supply stores, when they have their change-your-own-oil special, I mean, they've told me that nobody brings the used oil back.
Right.
You know, and you know, there's only a limited number of places where it can go. I doubt they're burning it in some modified furnace in their house. So I always worry about what idiots and criminals are throwing in there besides the stuff we were done with. And the other is all the medications that we people are taking, you know, that survive the composting process. So I would never use biosolids / sewage sludge on food crops. I would hope that you wouldn't overfeed centipede because I've been led to believe it's a very light feeder.
That's correct.
But the only reason I would say not to do it is if you were right next to a fragile waterway or
uh-huh.
over top of a water supply, or I would keep it away from people's wells
uh-huh.
just to be safe. Now, this is from your municipality, so I think by law they have to have it tested, right?
That's correct. It's certified.
And have you seen the test results? You know, the levels of heavy metals, contaminants, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I need to go back and revisit that, but yeah, that's an interesting point.
Let the facts tell you what to do, man.
Okay.
If the batch is really clean, then even I would say on lawns, especially for the reasons you gave, which are all right on target, I would say go for it. But the one thing, and I realize it's not what you called about, but I would urge you not to feed these lawns in the fall. They're warm season grasses and should only be fed when they're actively growing, no matter what result you want.
That's a good answer and gives me a good direction to go in.
Yeah, and I think it's a good organic material in the sense that it's not a high nitrogen chemical fertilizer. I think there's the potential here for a lot more good than harm.
Great.
All right, Whit, thanks. That's a great question, man.
Thank you.
Take care. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody with a hopefully helpful spouse that it's once again time to play Hide the Pruners. All of our long-lived plants are trying to go dormant now that the nights are getting cooler and the days shorter. And while the impulse to give them a little trim may be great, it is the worst time of year to do so. Allow your plants to go fully dormant. That means uncomfortably cold weather for you before you do any trimming. And don't prune spring bloomers until after they bloom next year. But don't go running outside with super glue and duct tape just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and a closer look at the morning glory and its potential for becoming a weedy mess. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
You're listening to WHYY. It's 11:38, 66 degrees in Center City.
Mike McGrath, right back at you with local events. It's free peony pieces for all tomorrow, Sunday, from 2 to 4 p.m., when the Mid-Atlantic Peony Society holds their Dig and Divide Fall Social at the Scott Arboretum of Swarthmore College. The Pennsylvania Horticultural Society presents a free fall festival and open house at Meadowbrook Farm in Abington Township next Saturday the 15th from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. with hay rides, a straw bale obstacle course, pumpkin painting, and pumpkin launching? Oh, the humanity. And the nationally renowned Perennial Plant Conference returns to the Scott Arboretum of Swarthmore College this coming Friday, October 14th. We'll post all the details at the events section of our website, youbetyourgarden.org.
Later today on Fresh Air Weekend, Howard Gordon, former executive producer of 24, is our guest. He'll talk about co-creating Showtime's new series, Homeland. It's about a POW who's just come home from Iraq and a CIA agent who suspects the soldier has become a spy for Al-Qaeda. Fresh Air Weekend comes your way at 1 today here on WHYY. Forecast for today, mostly sunny skies, high reaching to about 77. Right now, temperatures bumped up a couple notches to 68.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. Morning glories, are they a beautiful vining plant that makes great use of limited space, or are they something your neighbors should fear if you're growing them in your limited space? We'll discuss the topic in the question of the week after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Roberta, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Oh, thank you, Mike. I'm glad to speak with you.
I'm glad to speak with you. Roberta, where are you?
I'm in Philadelphia, Bella Vista neighborhood.
Bella Vista, yes. A subdivision of South Philadelphia, where South Philadelphia meets Old City, a beautiful neighborhood.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. We like it here, too.
And see, I know where it is. What can we do for Roberta in Bella Vista?
Well, I'm part of a group that's been planting trees around the neighborhood for the last few years.
Terrorists!
Yeah, and I'm concerned about a problem that we're having with trees getting damaged by dog urine.
Oh, it's tough. You know, you've got a lot of dogs in Center City.
Yeah.
Not a lot of trees.
And also, they don't have backyards. You know, these are row homes, so most people don't have a place where their dogs can do their their business privately, so our public spaces are especially hard hit. But what I'm worried about is the damage the dog urine does to the bark of the trees, especially the new young trees that we've
Right, because it's you know, probably especially in Center City, you know, where the dogs probably don't get walked as much as they should.
Right.
And as you pointed out, don't have access most of the time to an outside area. The urine is very concentrated, which means it's going to be very nitrogen rich,
yes,
which, as you point out, can be very damaging to young trees.
Well, what we're planning to do is put fairly low fences around the trees around this particular park. We have
like the nice wrought iron.
Well, we can't afford that. We have 41 trees.
Right. So what are you going to use?
Well, we're going to use a plastic that looks like wrought iron that, and our sample seems to be holding up pretty well.
So a vinyl imitation of a wrought iron fence.
Exactly.
That's not the worst you could do. But you know what? I think they might be able to skirt that distance.
Oh,
you know?
So you got a 3-foot tree pit, is what you're thinking.
Yeah.
And that even if the dog is on the outside of the fence, it's still going to do damage to the bark.
Yeah, and also the nitrogen is going to concentrate in the soil.
Right.
Which is the bigger problem if we don't get rain. So do you do any kind of signage? I mean, if you're going to have these nice vinyl fences, it would seem to be pretty easy to be able to put a simple black and white sign on it.
We designed a nice little sign, and we put up 30 of them, and within 2 days, there were two left.
Oh, really?
So we're just going to keep putting the signs up.
And you're an independent group. You're not associated with the Horticultural Society's tree tenders?
Well, we are tree tenders, and we're a neighborhood division of tree tenders.
Okay. I'll explain to the people outside our area that the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society, the people who put on the Philadelphia Flower Show, use the flower show money for many great public greening projects, one of the best of which is tree tenders, in which they train and enlist people in neighborhoods to plant and care for trees. I'm thinking something that would be like 6 inches away from the actual trunk, but be a cone, maybe like 2 feet high, and just put it in the ground. And I mean, let's just call a spade, it would be a urine deflector. I can't believe they don't exist, if you know what I mean, in like a municipal supply catalog somewhere. But the fact that your signs have been stolen, I think you have to go the extra mile. I think the little fence is a great start. I would like to test a urine deflector that would not touch the trunk of the tree, you know, wouldn't be doing any damage, but any liquid material that would hit it would roll off, and I think it would keep a lot of it out of the soil. It would certainly keep all of it off the trunk of the tree.
Right. All right.
Good luck,
Mike.
And thank you for planting trees.
Oh, yes. Well, we'll keep doing it in any case.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Ginny, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad to talk to you.
I'm glad to talk to you, Ginny. Where are you?
I'm in Alexandria, Virginia.
Just outside of Washington, D.C.
That's true.
And what can we do for Ginny in Alexandria?
Well, I feel like I've lost my battle again with the birds and squirrels over my tomatoes. The last couple of years, they've damaged or destroyed more of the fruit than I've been able to pick. Even though I've put some low fencing around the perimeter of the garden plot.
And what's that going to stop?
Well, then I put chicken wire around that, hoping that would stop the squirrels from getting in. And then I put poultry netting over the top.
You can't stop squirrels,
but that's
Ginny?
Not stopping them. And I was heartbroken a couple times because I saw birds inside the poultry netting that were trying to get out. So they did get out, but I can't seem to keep them away. So I know it's the end of the season, but I was hoping
that you
might have some thoughts.
We're talking next year. You want tomatoes next? This was a lousy year for tomatoes anyway, Ginny. So, you know. All right, first things first, are you feeding the birds?
No, we don't.
Are you right next door to people who do heavy bird feeding?
Not at this point. I had a neighbor who used to have one, but
he doesn't fill it anymore. And there's no, and you're certainly not feeding the squirrels deliberately.
That's correct.
Okay, good. when you grow your tomatoes, how do you support them?
I've got tomato cages and stakes that I'm using.
And what kind of tomato cages? What are they, pre-made? Did you make them yourself?
No, they're pre-made. They're the round, large round at the top, and then they're tapered toward the bottom with the little stakes at the bottom.
Okay, and but these are the industrial size ones, not
yes.
not the pitiful little ones.
Right, correct.
Okay. It is a little bit more work, but if you make your own tomato cages, you can make them squirrel and bird proof. And it really can end a lot of stress. Now, one theory is that birds and squirrels are attacking your tomatoes, especially early this past summer, because there was no water around for them. I mean, clearly that wasn't the excuse late in the summer. There was plenty of water everywhere. But the first thing you want to do is you want to put a bird bath up outside of your garden and keep it filled with fresh water. So just in case they're going for your tomatoes, just to get the moisture inside, you've given them fresh water. You've removed that one excuse.
Great idea.
Well, it's something that should always be done. But if you go to any home center, you can buy animal fencing. It may be sold as turkey wire, rabbit fencing, animal fencing. You buy it in 25 or 50 foot rolls. You unroll it, take a 6 foot length of it. Using a pair of tin snips, you turn it into a real tomato cage. Then when you plant your tomatoes early in the spring, you put this cage in the ground with the tomato plant in the center, and then you drive a couple of stakes through the side of the tomato cage to hold it in place. Now, this was a lot of work, but now you're done. As the tomato plant grows, it will vine around the inside of the cage. So even if you grow the really big tomatoes, the ones whose vines get 10 or 12 feet long, it'll all stay inside at least three quarters of the way through the summer, because by the time even a big vine gets to the top of a 6 foot, 5 foot high cage, it'll have used up 8, 9, maybe 10 feet of its length, because it's not going straight up, it's wrapping around the sides. And then you just take a little bit more of the material, you make a little lid for the top of the cage. And that way, all the tomatoes are inside. You put your lid on the cage using twist ties or something you can easily take on and off. When a tomato is ripe, or even three quarters ripe, you want to pick it and bring it right inside. But 95% of your tomatoes are going to be safely inside this cage. The squirrels won't be able to get into the cage, especially if you cage the top. And only the smallest birds would get in the side. If that starts to happen, then you can just throw bird netting over the entire cage because you've got the perfect support.
Okay.
But I will tell you, you've got to break the habit, because once these creatures get used to sampling your tomatoes, they get bolder every year. There is a very simple tool you can buy called Bird Scare Flash Tape. It comes in a roll like Scotch tape, but it's Mylar, and it's designed in such a way that you hang these strips of it on your tomato cages, and the least little breeze sends it snapping and flapping, and it makes noises. It whistles, and it snaps, and it cracks, and it's made of a material that reflects light in strange ways, and it's often enough to keep lots of birds away.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Fight that battle against those evil squirrels.
Right. Okay.
All right. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. Are morning glories pretty plants or invasive weeds? Our insightful question this week comes from Bruce in Center City, Philadelphia, who writes, "Mike, I have very little area in which to garden. One plant I find to be trainable and easy to grow is the morning glory. I help the vines find their way onto fences out back and electrical poles out front. Some of my neighbors love them, others call them a noxious weed. If my vines aren't growing over other living plants, are they, quote, weeds? Is the term weed purely objective, Or is there a subjective view of what is and is not a weed? And should my neighbors be afraid? Am I helping to propagate something terrible? Or am I simply growing a beautiful flowering vine that softens the view of concrete and asphalt? Thanks for your input. Well, Bruce, there are two famous definition quotes in my business. A perennial is a plant that, had you not killed it, would have lived for many years. And a weed is a wonderful plant growing in the wrong place. Now let's take running bamboo as an example. It's a beautiful four-season plant that produces incredibly useful wood, provides cover for wildlife, and can be used to make great trellises, bean poles, arbors, and other garden supports. But its running habit can overwhelm natural areas, lawns, gardens, and even structures. In a dedicated area where it is restrained on all sides, running bamboo is a sensational plant. When placed where it can grow unchecked into wild areas or the property of others, it is the most noxious of weeds. Now, perhaps the most currently vilified, quote, weed is garlic mustard. It secretes compounds that kill surrounding plants, including big honking trees. It threatens a native butterfly by looking like the butterfly's host plant, but is instead toxic to it. And deer won't eat it, so they devour native plants while this monster spreads unchecked. Ah, but garlic mustard is edible by us humans, with flavors of garlic, mustard, and horseradish. It may have great potential as a medicinal plant, and it is reportedly not a problem in Europe, Asia, or other areas where it's considered native. Weed here, useful plant there. Now, I personally grow a lot of plants that other people call weeds. For instance, we love the sweet, flavorful fruits of the escaped ornamental known as wineberry, and I protect every brilliantly red cane that appears on our property. I anxiously await the thousands of sulfur-colored flowers that bloom up and down the dramatically tall spikes of mullein. Bees and other beneficial insects love the small flowers as well, and so I always leave a few of the plants in place, even when they pop up in my raised beds. And to us, wild violets are pretty plants whose edible flowers provide the otherwise hard-to-find nutrient rutin in its most natural form. But all three of those plants drive others to herbicides and bad language. And so the morning glories that adorn your personal property are beautiful annual flowers that make great use of your limited space by growing their vines faithfully up any support you provide. They even reduce summertime cooling costs when they're trailed up a sunny wall, diverting a ton of heat without doing the structural damage that self-clinging vines like ivy can cause. But any vines that escape to sprout up on the property of others are weeds to them. Morning glory vines that aren't supported by strings, trellis, or fencing flop around in an ugly tangle. Or even worse, they climb all over the plants that your neighbors had hoped to see, and they can be a bear to eradicate. In really warm climes, the morning glories that are annual plants here in the north become perennial and can easily be considered noxious. And even though true morning glories are annuals, that is, plants that die over winter and technically must be started anew every year, they drop a lot of seed. Some winters, maybe most, those seeds won't survive. But when they do, the number of vines that explode out of the ground in the spring can be biblical. It only happened to me once, but it took all summer to get the things under control, and I never planted morning glories again. Now, your location, Bruce, favors seed survival because of the heat sink the city creates. And Center City, Philadelphia, is an ancient neighborhood. It contains the two oldest continuously occupied blocks of row homes in the nation, and the houses tend to be jammed together, making it very easy for a plant to get communal. So stop growing them up power poles, where they can easily travel to drop their seed where it isn't wanted, maybe even make mischief with the odd transformer. Keep them close to home. Don't grow your vines up into areas that'll allow them to wander off your property. If one vine starts to get frisky and tries to make a hard right into somebody else's backyard, pull it down ASAP. And if you notice the vines returning some spring without you having had to plant fresh seed, be vigilant. Look for stragglers outside your property. Take personal responsibility for them and pull them up or spray them with white vinegar on a hot and dry day. Because at your house, they're flowers. Next door, they're weeds. Oh, one final note. There are white varieties of cultivated morning glory that are as annual in nature as their more familiar blue and purple flowered cousins. But if you didn't plant white morning glories, and white flowers appear on morning glory like vines, destroy every last one you see. That's bindweed, a noxious perennial that loves to strangle other plants. Well, that sure was an interesting look at whether a plant is a weed or a wonder now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, this and every question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read our excellent advice in detail, just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to have me declared a noxious species if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. You know the drill. This is where I yell at you to tell us where you live, yell at you to put the actual subject in the subject line, and plead with you to check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week, find the solution to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, hint, hint, in our Garden Answers A to Z section, and or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Kevin, don't call me Merv Griffin. Our webmasters are Baneful Rich Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar. Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia, is definitely not weedy. Our intern, Julia Worski, seems reliably well-behaved. The jury is still deliberating about our editor, Al Banks. I'm your host, Noxious Mike McGrath, and I definitely frighten the neighbors. And I hope to be able to continue doing so for at least another 14 years, beginning when I see you next week. Diseases attack them. Wasps eat their bark, and yet we love our lilacs. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll help you correctly care for these beautiful spring bloomers. Plus your fabulous phone calls.
Mike wades in weekly to offer words of wisdom and wackiness on winter squash, wallflowers, black walnut, even weeds. Saturday mornings at 11.